Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Thanks to advances in genetic testing, it's now easier and cheaper than ever to figure out your risk of developing some diseases like cancer, heart disease, and Alzheimer's. But getting the results can often come at an emotional cost. It raises questions like, what can you do and what should you do if you find out that you might develop Alzheimer's years down the road? A genetic counselor can help with those questions, someone who can explain what the genetic tests actually mean. But according to a recent study from Brigham and Women's in Boston, when looking at the risk of developing diseases like Alzheimer's, an intensive session with a genetic counselor might not always be necessary, and a much simpler process could work just as well. Carrie Goldberg, co-host of WBUR's Common Health blog, has been looking into this, and she joins us now. Hi, Carrie, and Happy New Year.
Thank you, Anthony. You too.
Good to see you. So, we know that it's becoming easier and cheaper to determine the risk of developing diseases like Alzheimer's, right?
Right, and in particular with Alzheimer's, there is a specific gene, the APOE4 gene, that is now very well studied, and it's pretty common. And it's known that if you have one version of this sort of bad APOE4 gene, that can triple your risk of Alzheimer's. And if you have two versions, that can actually raise your risk by 10. It can give you 10 times the risk of Alzheimer's. So we've got this gene that we can test, and we do know a lot about its effects.
All right. So right now, if a patient wants to find out their genetic risk of developing Alzheimer's, what's the process like?
Well, usually it's the patient going to the doctor and saying, I have a lot of Alzheimer's in my family and I'd like to be able to find out if I'm at particular risk. They also have the option of going to what's called a direct-to-consumer genetic testing company and getting the results that way.
I see. So this is very much what the future looks like, right, in terms of finding out our genetic predisposition to various diseases?
Exactly. There are so many diseases in which our genetic makeup can raise or lower the risk of whether we'll actually get that disease. And Alzheimer's is a good example in that it's not a slam dunk. It's not that if you have this gene, that means you will get the disease, but it affects whether you're at higher risk or not. So that's the kind of information that we'll be getting so much more of as genetic testing gets about a million times cheaper than it used to be a few years ago.
All right. Well, let's introduce Dr. Robert Green, who worked on the study that we're talking about. He's a physician scientist in the Division of Genetics and Department of Medicine at Brigham and Women's Hospital and Harvard Medical School. And Dr. Robert Green, welcome to Radio Boston. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
So you're one of the leading researchers on how people react when they find out about their genetic risk, specifically for Alzheimer's. How do people generally take this?
Well, that's right, Anthony. And for the past 10 years or so, we've been doing experiments in which we give people different types of genetic information and try to understand how they react to it and what they do with it. Now, what we found in this particular study was when we directly compared how people reacted to the information when they got it through the whole formal genetic counselor process versus a process that was much more like you get in a doctor's office, a kind of brochure, a question and answer, a quick blood draw, and then you get the results when you come back. We found that people reacted in a pretty equivalent way. And basically, none of them had excessive distress, anxiety, or depression. So that's very reassuring because there simply aren't enough genetic counselors to go around for all of the different types of genetic risk information we might want to use someday in the practice of medicine.
I see. So the study doesn't say don't use a genetic counselor. It just says if there isn't a genetic counselor available, you're going to be okay.
Well, absolutely. And it's just for this type of genetic information. I'm a medical geneticist myself. I work very closely with genetic counselors and have huge, huge value attributed to them in almost all sorts of clinical situations, particularly those involving reproductive choices, particularly those involving high penetrance or high deterministic mutations, such as a family that's struggling with whether to learn whether someone's carrying a cancer predisposition gene. But, you know, there's a whole category of genetic information that's not like that. There's a whole category of genetic information that's much more like, oh, having a elevated cholesterol level. It increases your risk for something, but it doesn't mean you're definitely going to get it. And I think for that category of information, we might be able to sort of relax our reflex dependency on genetic counseling.
So I'm wondering, Dr. Green, do you expect pushback from the genetic counselors on this study?
I don't think so, because I think that this does not challenge the extraordinary value of genetic counselors in the important genetic areas such as Mendelian diseases, reproductive decision making, and so forth.
I want to ask you both, but I'll start with Carrie. For diseases for which we have no cure, what can a person even do if they find out they're at risk, for example, for Alzheimer's?
Right. So there's no cure for Alzheimer's, and there's really not much that you can do. I mean, I guess you could exercise a little more, you could have a somewhat better diet, you could be more paranoid about your memory lapses, but you might still want to know. I mean, people really vary in terms of whether they're maximalists in terms of information or minimalists. I feel like I would want to know if I were at increased risk for Alzheimer's. It might change how I structure my life.
What do you think, Dr. Green?
Carrie's exactly right. And survey after survey after survey, along with actual situations in which we offer people information, show that whereas people clearly do more want the kind of information that they can medically act upon, many of them, not all of them, do want risk information for things we would not consider medically treatable. And this is for a whole variety of reasons: curiosity, future planning, financial planning, being able to be involved in clinical research, being able to get their children ready for something they might have or their family might carry. So this is a whole arena of what we call personal utility as opposed to clinical utility. And I'm not sure whether society and the medical system should be asked to pay for information that is gathered for these reasons, but clearly a subset of people want this information.
And I want to ask you too, Dr. Green, just about in terms of the implications of your study. It seems really, really important because in the years ahead, we're going to be barraged by just tons of genetic information. And this just seems to provide one of the sort of road signs about what to do with it and how to respond to it.
I think so. I think we're entering an era where all of medicine is genomic medicine. I think it won't be very long before good clinical care simply requires that what genetic information you have gets integrated along with the rest of your family history, your personal history, your laboratory tests, your x-rays, and so forth. So I think that's all coming. And exactly as you say, I think we're going to have to decide which pieces of the genomic medicine spectrum require sort of a special channel of communication and which can be appropriately integrated into day-to-day clinical care with your actual primary care physician.
All right. Well, that's Dr. Robert Green. He's a physician scientist in the Division of Genetics and Department of Medicine at Brigham and Women's Hospital and Harvard Medical School. Robert Green, thank you so much.
Thanks very much to both of you.
And Carrie Goldberg is co-host of WBUR's Common Health blog. Carrie, thank you.
My pleasure, Anthony.